going into it, I can just talk about why I'm excited going into it. The documentary part. Documentaries for me, I've had a personal love and interest in them for a long, long time. I guess going all the way back to when I was a little kid growing up in Los Angeles. And grew up in a lower working class neighborhood. It was just a standard theater. We'd go to the theater during the Second World War. As a little kid, I just remember seeing two features and Pathé newsreel showing the war going on in the country, and then cartoons and shorts. And it was a broad venue, which has been pulled away over the years because of the weight factor in business and so forth. But I remember really enjoying that and thinking that gave me information about what was going on in the world, particularly of a severe nature. Well, I was going to have family members to die there. So documentaries, I think, got into my head then. And then years later, when I became sort of interested and active clinically, I was very taken with some of the early documentaries that Emilio D'Antonio and the Drew Associates, Mavis, and so forth. And I was very, very taken with how entertaining sharp-edged truth could be. And so, I don't know, it got into my head in some of the first films that I was able to produce. I borrow very heavily the documentary style of You Are There. So obviously, documentaries have meant a lot, so much so that when the festival survived, I mean, we had no idea when I started this in 1986, I didn't know whether it was going to make it or not. And because it was not going to be about commerciality, it was going to be about diversity and new product and new voices, a place for discovery, but I didn't know what I was going to work on. But at any rate, once the thing got going and it looked like we were going to survive and we had a platform to work from, we then had the chance to expand the so-called mission, if you want. And I saw documentaries as something that should be promoted. We should use the festival to promote documentaries heavily because the mainstream was not really allowing them any space other than going into some academic area. I honestly believed that documentaries would reach a point in time where they would be equal to theatrical, because they were getting better and better, and they were getting closer and closer to narrative and theatrical films. So I wanted us to be sort of on the vanguard of that and be leading the charge. So tonight's film is really kind of coming to that point. And by opening the festival with that film, we really are kind of making a statement about what we feel about the importance of documentary. And also the content of the film, where Fred speaks of. The other thing was that on the festival, I want to remind people, sometimes I guess I fell into retirement and trying to remind people about who we were and why we're here and what we're about when the success of the festival has overwhelmed sometimes that fact because of the outer tiers that have formed around success, like tiers that bring in fashion and wish markers and all that stuff, which is, it's okay, that's part of the deal, and it's fun for a lot of people. This should be fun. But finding what we're really about is a festival of discovery of new and very, very fresh work from new artists that are going to bring new ideas to the screen. Now, that means that there's probably going to be a lot of stuff that's not commercial. We never intended for that. We were more relying on the idea of diversity being an attraction rather than commerciality. Who wants to be in the position of deciding what's commercial or not? Leave that to the mainstream. But what happened was that as things changed, the success came and brought other elements, which, as I said, is fine. But we would like to try to remind people about what the core, why we're here and what we're about. The other thing is that the changes that come over time, that suddenly when you have the buyers coming in, and you hear a lot of comments about the festival, what's coming up, well, what's this, what's that, and they look at the guide, and And they start imagining some of the things, they're looking at the bios, and they say, well, gee, this looks like you've got some really interesting, diverse stuff. And that I can guarantee. We'll see. On the other end, where the buyers are, they say, well, is there going to be anything there? I don't know if I see anything here that's going to be commercial or brokerage, which I don't really care about. And you say, well, why don't you just find out? You know, what has always kind of amused me is every festival, there's all this thing called buzz. And what's the buzz? Well, nobody knows until it's over. I mean, there's been buzz about stuff that's tanked and there's been, or didn't get bought, and buzz about unbuzz or non-buzz about things that slid through under the radar, like the Blair Witch Project. So anyway, having said all that, I just want to remind people that we, despite what the festival has become in the largest sense, it's, in our mind, we program it like a festival, not a market. And so, having said that, about the product, the other changes that I've seen that I'm kind of interested in watching is over time, you know, earlier on when films first came here, there was like a lot of themes about coming of age. And the coming of age very often had a young teenager running away from home or going to live with an old grandfather at a cabin in the woods, or, you know, something of that sort. It was very insular. And, you know, good. I mean, it's good stuff. But that's where things were going. That's things started out. And then now, I think what you will see this year is that you're going to have some, it's gone more global. There is more global interest in the film. Bigger issues. The globalization that's occurred in our world, in our society, has moved into film, and film is following it. And I think there's some pretty exciting stories about other cultures and so on. Having said that, that's enough. I want to get on with it, but just wanted to share that with you all. And bring in Jeff Gilmore. He's back there taking a Valium. Jeff there?
Starting during the festival and going on after the festival, that'll give people everywhere
a chance to appreciate the range of shorts that we have in the festival, the narrative, documentary, and animated work. And in cooperation with the Sundance Channel, Bob, the first time we're stretching out, making access to this work available in a different way. We're also very excited about one of the major changes in terms of what's happening in the festival's content with our New Frontiers section. You know, the avant-garde in American cinema has always been a difficult subject to talk about. It's usually been very marginal, oftentimes marked by a certain kind of formalism. In the 90s, it went through a real dormant period. There's a real change going on right now. There's an evolution that's opening up this nexus of this world, of the art world, the film world, and what's going on with new technology, that I think is going to create a whole new generation of experimental and fresh innovation that's on display literally across the street in our whole new frontier section that involves installation, involves a range of different programming set up with my colleagues John Cooper and Sherry Freelo, who we'll be talking about after the show. And I think giving us a sense of how much the independent arena has to evolve. I think that the kind of work that we showcase in this festival, the diversity and the discovery of this festival, is emblematic of what the independent arena has offered us in the past. But a couple of years ago, we opened up the global arena by setting up a competition, international competition, and this year we couldn't be more excited with the range of work in that competition. We've talked about that in past years. This year again, I want to bring it out, make it a note that people really need to make, I think, an effort to look at the various sections of the festival, the frontier, the international competitions, as well as the American competition, to get a full sense of what we're presenting. I don't want to talk too much. We really want to leave the discovery of the film to you, and discover the quality of the film to the audience. And when you kick a festival off with a film of the quality, and really I think inspirational qualities of Chicago 10, it literally creates a great anticipation, both for me, knowing that period so well, and I think for an audience that will really, I think, see something tonight, regardless of whether or not you remember that period personally, or it's just something that you've read about in the past. This festival has always been about risk-taking, but this film is particularly about the kind of risk-taking that it takes to make a change in this world. That's what the focus of the anti-war movement was in the United States back in the 70s, and that's the focus of this work. And it's with really a great pleasure that I welcome back to Sundance, Brett.
And there's very little separation at this festival between fiction and nonfiction. which I think is appropriate in terms of Chicago 10, because Chicago 10 is a film that is very much a hybrid in mixing archival footage with some wonderful performances by some great actors. I think this festival, I think the reason documentaries have penetrated the marketplace as deeply as they have is because of what these gentlemen have created here. And on a personal note, I really feel like my career was launched here. Most of what I've achieved in my career has come directly out of this festival. And literally in 1999, I was here with my family. My parents ended up buying some land in Oakley, Utah, not too far from here, and built a house. And so we've really laid down roots here in the area. Some of Chicago 10 was edited here in Oakley last year. And so it's really special for me to be here and to show this film. And last, I'd like to say that when I conceived of Chicago 10, my goal was to try to create not a film about Chicago, but a film that would provide the experience of Chicago. And early on in the process, like most filmmakers, you start to imagine where you're going to premiere the film and how it's going to go down and this and that. And I had my eyes set on the Eccles Theater from day one. And 5 years ago today, I premiered the Kids' Days in the Picture in that same theater. It was a really magical moment. And for the last few years, going back to from Oakley to Park City, I drive past it every time and sort of look over there and smile. And last year, I was here editing the film during the festival, and my editor and I came down and tried to see a movie at the Eccles, but we couldn't get in, and we waited in line for like an hour and a half. And I remember turning to the last two people that they cut off, and I remember turning to Stuart and saying, "This is a bitch, man." And I was like, probably we'll have our film here, but then we'll have next year, and we can get into the film. But as I said, I wanted to create an experience with this movie, and I can't think of a better place or time to unleash this film than this place right now in Park City. When we started this film 5 years ago, I had no idea that it would be as relevant today as it really is. And I think you'll see tonight, although say I didn't do any editing in the last 2 weeks since Bush made his latest announcement. It's a huge honor. It's obviously, you don't dream about opening the Sundance Festival, it's so sort of intangible and out of, you know, your realistic goals as a filmmaker, but to be invited to be here is just incredible, and I look forward to the time when we don't even have to talk about whether it's the second documentary film or the third documentary film, because this festival has done such a wonderful job of blurring that line, and it's just an enormous honor to be here.
We're going to open up for questions. We have a few minutes. To Bob or to Brett. Anybody? Brett?
Mr. Redford, in terms of diversity as an attraction, talk about diversity politically, and would you just speak to the people who think that Sundance is only oriented to the left?
Say the last part.
Would you speak to the people, in terms of diversity politically, would you speak to the people who think that Sundance is only oriented to the left?
Well, okay, the first part is the diversity, the political diversity part. We've always been politically diverse, considering that that's one of the strengths of the country. Free society. In light of what's happened in the last 6 years, political diversity has been attempted to be thwarted, and we've kept it alive here. We've not adhered to any of the snuffing attempts that have come from the administration. We kept free of that, so our stuff probably becomes more and more political as a result. On the other hand, you all got all kinds of views, and they should be heard. And the second part, the left, well, I'm left-handed. If I had any, I think the behavior, let's put it this way, I think the behavior, whatever you feel about moderation, I'm not a very moderate person. But whatever you feel about it, that's been pretty well taken off the boards. And so I think anybody with a rational mind, with a sense of decency, is being positioned as a lefty by the behavior of extreme right. So it's, they've kind of pushed it. But I just believe in the fundamental tenets of democracy. When they get pushed, shoved, compromised, or attempted to be snuffed, it pisses me off.
Try to remind people what it means to take a stand and to get out there and raise your voice and have it heard, regardless of whether you're a Republican or Democrat. And that was truly my goal going into this project. Was this what I didn't intend this to be a leftist film or something, a conservative film. It was about encouraging people to raise their voice. And the idea was to try to do it. I believe, and I think most of us would agree, that most social change is brought about by youth movements and by younger people. So in order to inspire them, we try to create the film in a youthful language. There's no interviews, there's no talking heads. The people you see on the screen are in their 20s and early 30s, and I hope audiences are inspired by their actions as I was. You know, I was born a month after the convention, I was born October 68, and the first time I saw the footage of the police riots in Chicago, and the march of the Conrad Hilton, I was just absolutely blown away by the sort of courage and the ability that people had to sort of put themselves in harm's way to allow a voice to be heard. And I thought it was something that was generally sort of lacking. And where, you know, I don't know where the Abbie Hoffman, someone was asking earlier, who's Abbie Hoffman? Where is Abbie Hoffman today? Is it John Stewart? Where is it? I don't know. I haven't really seen him. But I hope that answers the question.
Go ahead.
Mr. Redford, do you see the revitalization of the documentary form you were talking about earlier and the reaction to the monopolization of truth and facts specifically by television?
The last part again, I'm sorry.
Do you see it as a reaction towards the growing power of the official version, if you want to call it that? I'm referring specifically to television on what we have
as
news.
Yeah, I do. I think documentaries have not only played a role in taking film more into a cultural exchange, which we're very committed to, rather than just straight entertainment, but also I think it's become a little bit of the truth to power element in light of what we've been given and the deceptions and the deceits and so forth, and where lying was treated like a political asset, you know, and how does some, and particularly young people, how do they get a grip? I mean, how are they going to know what to do when they don't know what's going on? And so I think documentaries, even if they're extreme from a point of view, are usually coming from such a personal place, and as Brett says, at risk. I'm completely with him on this film because that was a time when I was certainly in that age. And the idea that people could, what they would risk to have their voices heard, and then you look at where we are today, I think it's a film we're seeing. So yes, I do think that documentaries are playing that role.
Like to see come of that artistic.
Well, I mean, change is inevitable, and change produces all kinds of new things that can't be predicted. And I think we're in that phase right now where there's such incredible changes going on so fast, people can't keep up with it. And, of course, it's going to affect the film business. New technology has not only democratized, the internet has democratized news and how information gets simple. I think that's good. It's given a lot of junk that comes with it, but that's all right. I'd rather have the other. On the globalization part, as borders have collapsed, I mean, I guess we've seen that here, or at least I've seen that as a very positive thing, because it allows film to play a greater role on a larger scale, particularly documentaries. And the idea of us going there and bringing them here allows them to play a greater role in that. And I think that the other thing that's happening with globalization is that people's personal stories that are reflections of the societies they're in, whether they're corrupt or whether they're in danger or whether they're collapsing or whether they're on the move upward, is very healthy for us to see. I think one of the problems in our society is that leadership has had such a either a non-view or a dim view of history, or what or foreign cultures. Who are they? How do they live? What do they think? Well, films and documentaries can bring that information to us, because we certainly don't see it evidenced in our government. So, yeah.
I was struck by Bob's comment about he's not a very moderate fellow. But I was thinking about the tone of almost all opening night films and almost all the festivals. They tend, in this festival in particular, they've always been well made, they've always been thoughtful, but they've always had a kind of a moderate pulse about them. And it strikes me that the Chicago 10, the subject matter behind Chicago 10 is certainly about immoderate people and immoderate actions during the Chicago demonstrations. And it seems like it's something of a departure for this festival to have chosen a stronger film, and at least in a political sense. And I was just wondering, do you agree that it's a departure in some sense? It seems that way to me.
Well, yes, in a sense. We did have a documentary a couple of years ago about riding the giant waves. I do. I'll let Jeff speak for himself.
I mean, you know, I think there's a breadth to the subject matter in documentaries at the festival this year that I think is really covers the gamut from the political to the personal, as we've had in the past. And I think that the idea that particularly what we're focused on in telling stories at Sundance really does involve a range of different kind of agendas and perspectives. It's actually interesting that in almost every section of the festival that we have documentary, and they speak towards such a range of aesthetics and such a range of subject matter that it's just, I think, underscores the transformation that the documentary arena is undergoing and still undergoing. You know, maybe it has to do with a new generation's perspective towards realism, realist aesthetics, even the influences from television and cable and all of the different kind of work, because it certainly moved beyond the traditional forms. And it, as we've said, it has nothing to do with talking heads and education anymore. It has a lot to do with a lot of different kinds of work. So we're very pleased to be able to present that range.
I was just going to say, at its core, I mean, not that my film is very similar to Friends with Money, but trying to make an entertaining film, it's not just all politics. And, you know, I think in the spirit of Yippie, that was kind of one of the mantras of my film. The anti-war movement was a little stale at the time that Abby and Jerry brought theater and color into the movement and sex, drugs, and rock and roll and turned politics into a party. And so my goal in making this film was to do something that was first and foremost entertaining. Because if people didn't see the film, then the message would be lost there. Anyway, so it's, I think, politically a little more hard-hitting and edgier than some of the, maybe something like Friends with Money, but I think at the end of the day, I just was hoping to entertain you guys for a couple hours.
Another part, I mean, it's historical. It's got historical relevance.
see what went wrong with the movie as much as how good what was right about it. I mean, you were talking about a moderate. It was a moderate behavior on the part of the government that produced the moderate voices against it, and that's why you got. And I think one of the very we're moving in a similar place today, except there's no draft. That's the exciting thing. But I love there are a lot of things I like about this film, but one of them is that you get to look back and say, I was there, and I was sort of I was in that zone, and I felt what I felt, and I shared a lot of their feelings. But now I look back in retrospect, and I can see where they went off. As well as where they were on. And that has, I think, great relevance for an audience today.
So on.